For long stretches of time I slept, and whenever I woke there was some invalid's meal by my bed, prepared by Judith. I ate a mouthful or two, no more. When Judith came to take the tray away, she could not disguise her disappointment at seeing my leavings, yet she never mentioned it. I was in no pain, no headache, no chills, no sickness, unless you count profound weariness and a remorse that weighed heavily in my head and in my heart. What had I done to Emmeline and Aurelius? Dr. Clifton came. He listened to my heart and asked me lots of questions. Insomnia? Irregular sleep? Nightmares? I nodded 3 times. I thought so. He took a thermometer and instructed me to place it under my tongue, then rose and strode to the window. With his back to me, he asked, "And what do you read?" With a thermometer in my mouth, I could not reply. "Wuthering Heights? You've read that?"
"Mm-hmm."
"And Jane Eyre?"
"Hmm?"
"Sense and Sensibility?"
"Mm-hmm."
He turned and looked gravely at me. "And I suppose you've read these books more than once." I nodded and he frowned. Beneath his dark brow, his eyes narrowed to slits. I could quite see how he might frighten his patients into getting well, just to be rid of him. And then he leaned close to me to read the thermometer. "People look different from close-up. A dark brow is still a dark brow, but you can see the individual hairs in it, how nearly they are aligned. The last few brow hairs, very fine, almost invisible, strayed off in the direction of his temple, pointed to the snail coil of his ear. In the grain of his skin were closely arranged pinpricks of beard. There it was again, that almost imperceptible flaring of the nostrils, that twitch at the edge of the mouth. I had always taken it for severity, a clue that he thought little of me. But now, seeing it from so few inches away, it occurred to me that it might not be disapproval after all. Was it possible, I thought, that Dr. Clifton was secretly laughing at me? He removed the thermometer from my mouth, folded his arms, and delivered his diagnosis. "You are suffering from an ailment that afflicts ladies of romantic imagination. Symptoms include fainting, weariness, loss of appetite, low spirits. While on one level the crisis can be ascribed to wandering around in freezing rain without the benefit of adequate waterproofing, the deeper cause is more likely to be found in some emotional trauma. However, unlike the heroines of your favourite novels, your constitution has not been weakened by the privations of life in earlier, harsher centuries. No tuberculosis, no childhood polio, no unhygienic living conditions. You'll survive." He looked me straight in the eyes, and I was unable to slide my gaze away when he said, "Treatment is not complicated. Eat, rest, and take this." He made quick notes on a pad, tore out a page, and placed it on my bedside table. "And the weakness and fatigue will be gone in a few days. I'd like to ask you about these dreams of yours, but I suspect you wouldn't like to tell me." Stonily, I regarded him. "I wouldn't." His face fell. "Thought not." From the door, he saluted me and was gone. I reached for the prescription. In a vigorous scrawl, he had inked, "Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, The Casebook of Sherlock Holmes. Take 10 pages, twice a day, till end of course."